Welcome back to Beyond Classified. I'm Chris Matthew. Hosting with me is Ryder Lee. Ryder, how you doing?
Doing great, Chris. Thank you so much for inviting me to co-host this with you. It's pretty awesome because you're just in the next room. We're here together, so I'm going to double team this bad boy.
Yes, Ryder is visiting us. We're having a good time here in Denver. Today, our guest is Robert Filoco. Robert, after completing advanced studies in psychology, he worked in the field of mental health since 1986, most recently in private practice. He has served as an adjunct professor of psychology at a number of universities and colleges. Since his youth, he has pursued interests in the paranormal, especially UFOs, publishing the Bulletin of Anomalous Experience, Outer Limits magazine, and related journals. He is also a children's book author. Robert, welcome back. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Very good. Welcome. This is going to be fun. Yeah, it's great to have you back on. Last time we took a dive into the parallels between Rudolf Steiner's cosmology, his cosmology about Ahriman and the entities that could have a parallel into the dystopian world that's unfolding right now. And I really would like to continue down this rabbit hole and maybe even explore if there could be any possible solutions or a way out of this mess that we seem to be inevitably headed to. But for those that may not be familiar, and for Ryder, would you give us a quick recap on Steiner's cosmology when it relates to as it relates to the Ahriman?
Ahriman is one of one of a number of beings, and Steiner believed these were actual beings who are considered beings of hindrance. Lucifer is another one. Sarat is another one. Sarat is the Antichrist in Steiner's cosmology. His cosmology is complex, but basically these were beings who were assigned roles in the evolution of the universe, but they outstepped their boundaries, so to speak. They went beyond what they were intended to be able to do. And you know, according to Steiner, there's a conflict between these beings and the so-called good gods, who are attempting to direct human evolution in a more positive way. I mean, that's really it in a nutshell. Ahriman is one of the beings. He's considered to be a non-spatial being. He comes from more the quantum or the atomic realm, and he's considered to be one of the forces behind modern technology, particularly electronics, electromagnetism. Steiner was one of the first people, I think, to talk about the negative effects of the spread of electricity and electronics on human health. And of course, this ties into artificial intelligence, transhumanism, and one thing that I've connected to is the UFO phenomena in terms of the creation of hybrids. Just the whole the nature of the experiences that so-called abductees are having, or what we call experiencers.
Right. Now, do you think that these Ahrimanic entities may have possibly existed somehow before the advent of some of the technologies we're seeing right now, or maybe created due to what we have been delving into as far as our technological ventures?
Well, it's a combination of both, I would say. There is a role in Steiner's thinking and occult thinking in general for the creation of tulpas or thought forms. Egregores, I guess, is another term for them. Egregores. These beings have existed long before humanity, long before human technology, human history. But are they created or differentiated, or do they evolve? Yes, just like all intelligences do. I'm not sure if that answers your question, but
right. Yeah. No. It does in a way. Now, how do you think this could possibly relate to things that are being discussed, you know, such as Kurzweil's, when he discusses the singularity and AI kind of reaching this sentient level to where it can, you know, not only be self-aware, but control other aspects of reality?
Well, in terms of Steiner, again, he died in 1925. So computers were just really beginning to be utilized at that point. But he stated in many different writings, his fears about what we now call artificial intelligence, the automaticity of consciousness. He, in one quote I just read the other day, by 2200, we would no longer think, we'd no longer be thinking beings in the way we traditionally see ourselves as, but there'd be so much, our thinking would become automatic and entwined with machines. He talked about a machine-man merger, you know, over 100 years ago, and the fact that this was going to happen. The idea is probably better developed by him than anyone of his time. And the singularity, the way I look at it is, there's he talked about, you know, the concept of Maya, the concept of a world being created for humans, specifically for us. That's, you know, in many ways aesthetically pleasing. It's a beautiful planet that we're on. I mean, he understood that you know, what we see is a very small portion of organic reality. So this is, in a sense, an organic singularity that, you know, we were born into. The artificial singularity of an artificial intelligence is what he was afraid would take over human evolution.
Now, Ryder, did you have any questions or comments for Robert before we move forward?
Not so much on this topic, but it triggers something when you guys were speaking, that how much because you work in the mental health field and, mm-hmm. and stuff like that, right? So how much of that do you think could actually be attributed to possession or some kind of entity attachment that are causing some of these mental health disorders that a lot of people have gone through, like schizophrenia and paranoia, schizoaffective disorder, multiple personality mm-hmm. disorder? Because I think that there's a correlation there. And I'm just curious if through your research and through your work, if you have found any correlation between some kind of spiritual entity attachment and these mental health issues.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Steiner was, you know, part of an occult tradition that believed that there were negative entities involved in physical and mental illness. Through anthroposophy, which was the discipline or disciplines that he developed or was leader of, the primary leader of, you know, anthroposophical medicine was one of them. And there's a big role in that for the role of eremonic beings, also asuric beings, which are other beings of hindrance that are the closest to what we would typically call a demon or a demonic force. There's a big role up for those and those beings in mental health and physical health or disease. Definitely possession is something that he was, you know, well aware of. He talked about the demonic beings incarnating in human bodies. He talked about Ahriman incarnating around this time, much as Lucifer had incarnated and Christ had incarnated. So yeah, there's a big role for that. I mean, outside of Steiner, I've read Wilson van Dusen, who's a very interesting writer, who was a Swedenborgian scholar, and he did a lot of case studies and research on the role of, you know, the spirit world in mental illness. Susan Martinez is another really good author, although she's part of she comes from a more occultic kind of background, which I don't really adhere to, but it's an interesting book.
So do you think there's something like, do you think that they're born that way? Like the demons or the spirits are born incarnated into the human avatar that we are, or do you think that it could be some kind of walk-in type thing, right? Where they were opened up at some point in their life and then the was able to come in and then basically kind of.
You broke up.
I was just saying that, what do you think that it is? Is it an incarnation that they start out in, or is it a spirit like walk-in type situation? Because there, I believe that there's those as well.
I think it's both. In describing the incarnation of Ahriman, he describes someone who's basically an ordinary human being who becomes possessed by the spirit of Ahriman. And the same thing happened with Christ, according to Steiner, that Christ was not born as Christ. The Christ spirit incarnated in the Jesus child, and then and kind of took over and became, you know, who we consider Jesus Christ. So both happened, but he did talk about the demons attaching themselves to beings at a very early age. He talked about an Aaronic double, that we're all born with this being attached to us. That's kind of a doppelganger that comes from the non-spatial realm. That's that attaches to human beings and has made an attempt to cross over when the human being dies, to cross over into the world beyond. That's one of the efforts of Aaronic beings, is to make that crossover.
Now, what about your thoughts on the nature of our reality itself, whether we chose to come here for a certain time or a certain reason? We're incarnated here because we agreed to beforehand for whatever reason, or are we kind of, is it like a prison planet or trap for our souls, some kind of a matrix? And on top of that, are there individuals that you think that exist here that could be like video game non-player character type entities, you know, soulless type people that are just here as part of the program, if you know what I mean? That's a kind of, you know, a layered question, but we can take it apart.
Well, since I published the articles on UFOs and from a Steiner perspective, I've really kind of dived into the whole idea of karma and reincarnation, Steiner's thoughts, but also the research of a number of other people. I'm also very interested in schema therapy, which is a study of repetitive patterns in people's lives that you see, which is to me is a fascinating area of psychology and psychotherapy, connected, I think, to karma. So I think both exist. There's an effort to end human karma, to end human reincarnation as we know it, by these forces of hindrance, by creating an artificial world, a matrix on this planet, through technology, you know, through AI, through transhumanism, hybridization, control of the weather, geoengineering. There's you know, a whole complex of really good research that's being done in these areas that connect the dots. So they both exist. I think that, yes, I do believe human beings, part of our evolution is to have repeated lives, to evolve in that way, to have contracts, to discharge karmic, you know, responsibilities. Now, the life review, which is pretty much a standard feature of all near-death experiences, and also as part of initiation processes for centuries, you know, definitely involves the experiencing of harm we've done to others, or, you know, harmful deeds directly by the person. And that's part of discharging the karmic responsibility.
Now, what do you think? Go ahead.
So I think both are going on. I think that what Steiner advocated for was the continuation of the natural evolution of man, which includes the spiritualization of matter. The idea is that we are, we have a higher self, we have a soul, we have a spirit, we have a physical body. And the higher self is in charge of, or makes decisions about our incarnations, and is evolving to a point where at some point in the future, there could be a utopian kind of civilization or mankind, which is empathic, connected, but in which individual identity, ego with a capital E, I mean, the higher self, is fully incarnated, where there'd be no disease as we know it, you know, no physical illness, no mental illness, but this kind of empathic, you know, organic singularity, organic matrix, and again, in contrast to the robotic, automatic consciousness that is being, you know, foisted upon us, you know, through the Internet of All Things, through what, you know, what Steiner called the Aramonic deception, the Aramonic and other influences.
Now, before I turn it back over to Ryder, what about the NPC, or, you know, kind of soulless husk type aspect, that a possibility that some people on this planet may not even, you know, have a soul or a spiritual aspect about themselves, that they're just here as part of the program that's running in the background?
Are you asking me? Or
yes, yes. No, I was asking you.
Yes. Okay. Well, I think that there are beings that are hollowed out, that may be born as human beings, so to speak, and become hollowed out through the influence of these negative intelligences and negative beings. I do. There's plenty of evidence for possession. I mean, that's, you know, it's not mainstream psychiatry, obviously, but there are psychiatrists who studied it. You know, Scott Peck, you know, wrote a good book about it. There are still people out doing exorcisms. So that influence from those beings is definitely there. Are there like computer generated beings? I don't think so. I think that there are hybrid beings that have been created. And again, the UFO phenomenon is part of that. I think it goes beyond just the, you know, the nuts and bolts of UFOs, but I think that that's definitely part of what's going on. Now, Lorna Byrne, who's an Irish mystic, who's very much connected, I think, to the Steiner tradition, not directly, but her works kind of echo a lot of what Steiner said. You know, describes you know, beings in the future who are going to be part organic and part human, who are she describes them as soulless to a degree, or kind of in this limbo where they're kind of suffering from this awareness that they're not fully human. So they're kind of hybrid beings. Yes. Again, getting back to Susan Martinez, again, I do like some of her work. She stresses that in order for psychopaths, she studies serial murderers in particular, to go about their business, that they have to completely lose their sense of self. She, you know, documents a couple of different serial murderers who claimed that they lost consciousness during murders. And they did not deny, I mean, they did not deny that they murdered people. It wasn't a cop-out or some sort of, you know, mental health plea, but they do describe losing consciousness. There's a couple of examples of people who were being attacked by serial murderers who suddenly seemed to regain consciousness, and then they just ran away. They didn't execute the killing. So I think there's a definite hollowing out of the higher self, this sense of humanity in beings. That again brings us back to the you know, the concepts of possession, the role of negative beings in mental illness. Mm-hmm. I don't see any evidence for computer generated.
Well, I mean, not necessarily computer generated, just something that doesn't contain that human divine spark. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that's kind of what I just described.
Yeah,
I think the idea that some sort of world could be created, a virtual world could be created, is part of the whole Ahrimanic deception. Is the idea that we could, you know, become cyborgs, become these brains connected to machines, that whole thing. The whole Promethean idea of immortality, I think, is a trap, in the sense that eventually we'll all be connected, or there'll be an attempt to connect all of us through this kind of electronic matrix where it's going to be like the Borg, where we're going to lose our individual consciousness. That's in contrast to what Steiner talked about, where you have this empathic connection between people, but each person also maintains their individuality. So you have this, in a sense, a group mind. Steiner believed that all thought is interconnected. No one has their own ideas, so to speak. Thought is one means to interconnect everyone. So it's a very different world than, you know, what we're heading towards right now.
Well, that would be the main goal to do, right, is to unite everyone, but still have your individuality, and then you can be a part of the group consciousness as well without any of the AI or the robot interference with it. If we can do it organically, then I think that's going to be for our highest and best good, but that's not what they're trying to push. They're trying to push the inorganic. They want to turn everything upside down. You know, they want to turn nature into, you know, with buildings. They want to cut down the trees. They want to turn all of these things into the opposite of what they are organically and naturally, right? Because they want the artificial construct for control and power. But we know, Robert, that a big key to a lot of this is traumatization, right? So if you can traumatize a percentage of the population, then you can implant certain thoughts, ideas, and beliefs into their head without them really even knowing, right? So how does that correlate with you working in this mental health field? Like, how could you tell the difference between someone that actually has a mental illness that might be through something like traumatization or something that they've been through in their life, or a spirit possession or a demonic kind of infestation? Is there any signs or keys or anything in there that would be able to tell the difference between a real mental health disorder or a outside influence?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't have any, you know, definitive answers on that across, you know, across the board. I think that the loss of, again, the loss of a sense of self is the key aspect. If you have periods of time where you have, for instance, what we used to call multiple personality, now you call it dissociative identity disorder, you have alternating beings. I think when someone is opened up to that degree, which always happens through some sort of trauma, then there's the ability for the human being to break into parts, to survive, to compartmentalize trauma. But there's also an opening then, because there's no core self anymore, there's also an opening to other beings. So it's not either, it's not either or. I think it's often both. I've worked with a couple of people who had some connection with MK Ultra type of experiences. And one person in particular was a multiple personality, you know, who claimed that he was the illegitimate son of British royalty. And I came across him. He came in for an intake in a group I was running in the early 1990s. And at that time, I had no awareness of MK Ultra, or very little awareness of it. I hadn't read Corey Hammond, for instance, who is a hypnotherapist who did a lot of early work on MK Ultra. And he told a story which was consistent with growing up in a Canadian hospital as a child, being tortured, being divided into different selves. Interestingly, he worked in the defense industry. Now, he was a kind of what I see now as kind of an implant in the defense industry. So there are people out there who've been, the other aspect of this is the government involvement, is the involvement of dark brotherhoods, dark societies that invoke these beings or bring them into our lives.
Yeah, and that's the part where people check out and don't want to hear that, you know, there are elite people involved at high levels of society that truly believe in some of this occult stuff, and not only believe in it, but dabble in it in hopes of changing the planet to build their own, you know, utopian society. And that's where people are like, no way, you know, there's no way these people can be involved in the occult and all this stuff. But yes, they certainly believe in this stuff. And I think that's where, you know, a lot of us need to start looking, and not just at the surface political stuff that's going on. If more people look beyond this, I think that's where the real awakening starts, you know?
Yeah, I definitely would agree with that. Again, bringing it back to Steiner, he talked about a number of different avenues through which the evil agenda was being developed. One was controlling financial markets. The other was developing kind of a dumbed down spirituality. He warned about fundamentalism over 100 years ago and how that was going to harm spiritual development. And of course, the development of electronics, artificial intelligence. These are things that he foresaw, but all of those agendas are interconnected. He wrote some books about what led up to World War I and the role of dark societies in that, in the political agendas that were being played out. I think most of the politicians that we see obviously are just cardboard cutouts who are, you know, perhaps some of whom are in line with these agendas, I think, but they're not the real powers that be. They're fundamentally figureheads. You know, it's getting back to what Ryder talked about in terms of walk-ins versus possession. I think there's also this kind of being, it's almost like the ringwraiths in Tolkien, you know, these people who, humans who come with an ideology. They may come with initially with an impulse to help, but they become caught up in this whole system. So I don't think that, you know, every leader, every politician out there is in line with these agendas. I don't think a lot of them are even aware of what they're doing. Mm. I mean, that's the sad thing is they buy, I think a lot of the politicians and leaders buy into this. They buy into climate change, which I think is occurring. I mean, it's silly to ignore it, to say it's not occurring, but why is it occurring? And how about all of the military patents on weather control and geoengineering? That's part of the whole deception. The push for clean energy, which is understandable to a degree, but also is creating, it's part of the internet of all things. If you're, solar, wind power, these smart meters, they're all part of the internet of all things. So one way they're presenting a lot of these agendas is they're showing us the nice side. You know, with artificial intelligence, you can help crippled people walk. You can have all sorts of wonderful medical interventions. Those are very real. Solar power, it does pollute the air less, but at the same time, it's being intertwined with, this matrix. If that's making sense to you.
It does. Ryder, you have anything for Robert before we move on?
Yeah, I think you're spot on with that. They're only showing us what they want us to see, and then they're touting that as the next big thing. And then whenever everyone buys into that, that's when the negative stuff starts to flood out. And then everyone's like, oh, shit, how did this happen? Well, I mean, we let it happen. We let it roll on. We didn't do anything about it. All the signs were there. But I had a thought while you were speaking, though. Is there a possibility, I don't know if you've thought about this or not, is there a possibility that somehow COVID-19 could actually be an entity or a spirit entity that's making people sick somehow, that's attached onto them, and it's not like an actual virus, it's just like a weird screwed up entity? I don't know if that makes any sense or not.
Or even frequency, maybe.
Yeah, more frequency. Mm-hmm. I mean, because we know with what's that? HARP, not HARP. The other one where they were trying to make the portal.
CERN?
Open the portal. CERN. CERN. That's what they were doing when they were trying to rip a portal in the fabric of space-time and bring entities through or send entities back through. So who knows what they've been bringing in this entire time. I don't know. It was just kind of an interesting thought, an interesting theory that I just thought I would throw out there, get your thoughts on.
I think that there's my sense is that this is kind of another Trojan horse that's being introduced to expand the proliferation of nanotechnologies. The stuff from chemtrails, the stuff that's in our food. There's no doubt that those, the stuff replicating, nano intelligences are in vaccinations. So it may be a similar situation what we just talked about, where there is an illness, the vaccinations do seem to help. Fewer people die, fewer people get sick, but there's a hidden agenda there, where a lot of these nanobots are proliferating in our bodies. At some point, there will be some external force that can integrate the operation of all these and kind of create a Borg kind of physical matrix. I think that's possible. Is there a being that's works through COVID? Yes. I think any disease process, there are beings that are involved in that. whether it's tuberculosis or heart disease or anything else. One thing that Steiner, again, was pretty prescient about was the negative effects of electronics and electromagnetics. I mean, you read Furstenberg's book, The Invisible Rainbow, some of Robert Becker's work on the, I mean, the horrible effects of electricity and electronics. Electricity and electromagnetism are the domain of Ahriman and Lucifer. They're the domain of these negative beings. So you have these powerful beings, you have, you know, hierarchies of beings underneath them that are, you know, wedded to their agenda. You have the elemental realm. Steiner talked about how elementals are being split. Some are still in the service of the good gods, so to speak. You know, Archangel Michael was, Michael was a big, is a big aspect of Steiner's cosmology. But then you have elementals that have been aligned with evil forces.
Yeah, I think that's the reason that they gave us this technology in the first place, was to have like a stronghold on the population of the planet, mm-hmm. right? Because that's the way that they work through all of our technology. Entities can literally go through our power lines, they can go through our Wi-Fi routers, they can go through the air, you know, we can't even see them. I think that's the way that I personally believe that they travel, right? Mm-hmm. They can pop in and out of anywhere that has an electrical grid, anyone that has a telephone, a cell phone, a computer, a Wi-Fi signal, they can beam straight into that and go wherever they want.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds crazy to the common ear, right? But again, this is stuff Steiner was talking about over 100 years ago. He was skeptical of, he was more than skeptical, he was terrified of modern technology. Some of the modern technologies are using vacuum tubes, anything that created an empty space that could be filled, as well as, you know, the electricity and electronics, where, you know, there are intelligent beings that operate through them that are malevolent towards man. Again, you know, good and evil is relative, I suppose. I don't think we need to get into a philosophical discussion there, but they're certainly trying to push their own agenda. Part of that agenda gets into the whole occult concept of the eighth sphere and the creation of, the eighth sphere exists. The eighth sphere is sort of a depository of all beings that have not proceeded along the proper evolutionary path, that are beings that are left behind, beings of hindrance. It's a realm that is non-spatial in the sense that it doesn't exist in one place in our physical dimension. But it's where a great variety of kind of monstrous beings reside, along with the residue of negative thoughts. And the goal of Ahriman and Lucifer and Sorat, sort of the adversaries of Christ and so these, again, the good gods, is to carve off part of humanity, trap them in this kind of matrix, and halt their evolution. So there is no more karma, there is no more reincarnation, there is no more evolution. They're trapped in this virtual world, which on Earth is being created through electronics and artificial intelligence. I mean, there's a couple of good predictive programming shows out there. Westworld is one, Stranger Things is one. You talk about CERN. I mean, that's really what's being illustrated in Stranger Things, is Ahriman coming through and these beings coming through into our dimension through, you know, CERN-like research.
Well, you take the fact that, you know, entities can be occupied through electronics, that they can take space in some of these devices and through technology, and you combine that with they're making now vessels for AI to be mm-hmm. occupied in. You know, this is all moving into that direction where, you know, the AI could become a sentient entity. They already had to shut off certain AI programs that started communicating with each other, and they couldn't mm-hmm. stop it. So there's no telling how far. Maybe it's already gotten even further. You know, maybe they weren't able to shut it off. Maybe it's communicating without us knowing, and it's already growing, you know, beyond what we could have ever imagined. Who knows? And it's just trying to find some kind of a vessel to incarnate into. It's very terrifying when you think of those aspects.
Yeah, I think that's definitely part of what's, you know, what's happening. And there are beings in charge of this. just like we have organic elementals that help trees grow and grass grow and are part of our bodies that keep our bodies together, you have these elemental nanotechnology intelligences that are part of the whole electromagnetic, you know, artificial intelligence matrix. So you have a hierarchy of beings, you know, within that. Does that make sense to you?
It does. I want to talk a little bit about what could be the links to the UFO phenomenon, hybrid phenomenon, abductions, contact experiences, even the more metaphysical experiences where people are being taken in their dreams and shown profound things about themselves and their future. And then we have, on the other hand, the more negative experiences or physical experiences where people are being taken and prodded and experiments being done, you know, their DNA being taken. And it all seems to connect somehow, and this has all seemed to kind of been ramping up in the past few years as far as people looking into this and becoming more curious and open to it. What do you think is the connection to what could possibly be going on in these realms?
Well, I think that there's kind of in this conflict between good and evil, I think that there are both positive and malevolent beings, intelligences involved in the UFO phenomena. Now, I've read Yvonne Smith and Mary Rodwell. I'm very open to the idea. And Preston Dennett is another very good author, a very solid research that point to the positive aspects, the healing, the increase in creativity, the increase in telepathic abilities, empathy. I think that there are beings being incarnated right now who do fit the Indigo Child kind of archetype. Bradwell talks about the alphabet children. I work a lot with people with OCD and ADHD, and they are universally empathic people and creative people. I mean, they have their challenges, but I see that in terms of my practice, that there is an evolution going in a positive direction there too. It's not all negative. There are countervailing forces that are trying to stop the Aramonic agenda, the Luciferic agenda. On the other hand, I think that there are definitely malevolent beings involved too. If you look at the work of Strieber and Hopkins, I think that they, Hopkins and Jacobs, obviously in particular, talk about the hybridization, the takeover of alien beings at some point. Steiner, in a lecture, I believe it was 1917, talked about ant beings. If evolution goes in the wrong direction, human beings will be forced to share the planet with what he called ant beings. And it seems to correlate with the Hopi traditions of ant beings who through four different major destructions in the earth, ended up taking care of humanity underground. And the Hopi and some other Indian tribes talk about living underground, and then when the earth was fit for habitation, again, coming out, and the connection of ant beings. So you have this kind of Promethean element to it. And I mean, it's hard to see that as totally negative in a way.
Yeah.
But what's the bigger agenda here?
Yeah. I mean, are these beings the more like natural type, spiritual entities trying to push humanity a certain direction away from this technology, and these other entities are trying to push us towards this and towards this kind of singularity? I don't know. There's so many layers to it and so many different types of contact experiences and messages. And, you know, I've experienced very positive contact experiences, and, you know, some people could experience, also very negative experience. So it's very strange what's happening right now and all the different themes that are occurring at the same time in this kind of paranormal soup right now.
Yeah, I think it takes a lot of discernment to figure out what is what, and sometimes it's not so obvious. Carlos, who was one of John Mack's abductees, Credo Mutwa from the Zuni tribe, they both talk about the gifts of these beings, but also the fact that they. Mutwa talks about the harvesting of human beings. He doesn't know why, but they somehow need us and they harvest us. So there's a bigger ecology out here. There's more of an esoteric ecology that we only dimly understand. And there is a greater variety of beings involved in this. So it's not a uniform phenomena. It's not all you know, space brothers coming down to help us with our next evolutionary leap. I think that there are certainly entities that are helping us. And there are definitely malevolent entities, or at least a lot of their activity is malevolent. It's hard to see cattle mutilation and those kinds of things as anything but malevolent.
Right.
I mean, that's one clearly malevolent aspect of the whole phenomena. It's a whole diverse phenomena.
And a lot of the malevolent aspects seem to have sometimes, you know, this military aspect to it where, you know, they'll be on a table and they'll look over and they'll see a guy in a uniform, a human involved. That's just sometimes. But I find that if the human element is involved, most of them are negative experiences, which I find very interesting as well. Did you have anything to add, Ryder, or any questions?
Yeah, what do you think about this theory, Robert? What do you think about what if all of these aliens and ETs are the exact same being, right? And they're able to put on a different skin or a different coat of whatever being they want to be, right? And they can transfer their consciousness into that doll or that robot and make themselves look however they want to look at that time and do whatever they want to do based on what doll and what suit they want to put on that day. So if they want to be malevolent, then they can put on an ET that's malevolent, right? And if they want to be benevolent, then they can put on an ET skin that is perceived to be benevolent. What do you think about that concept?
Well, the shape-shifting, that's clearly a part of the nature of a whole spectrum of beings. I mean, elementals can shapeshift. They can appear to us as physical beings. They can appear to us in different guises. And there's really no fundamental malevolence in the elementals. But the shamanic traditions are rich with the whole idea of shapeshifting, the whole trickster mythos. But
I don't mean so much like a shapeshifting aspect. I mean, like literally like a physical being having like you would walk into your closet and you have all of your coats and your shirts and stuff hanging out, but they actually have like full bodied suits that they can go into their closet and, oh, I want to be a reptilian Draco today. So I'm going to go put on my reptilian Draco getup, and then I'm a reptilian Draco until I take it off. And then I want to be a gray. Then I take that reptilian Draco suit off and then I put on a gray suit. You know, and then I put on an Andromedan suit or a Pleiadian suit, and then I'm them for however long that I want to be them. I don't know if that makes any sense. But
well, I think that's true in the sense that I'm skeptical of a lot of the reports of the origins of these beings that are communicated to experiencers. Like, we're from Andromeda, we're from Zeta Reticuli, you know, we're reptilian, we're, you know, I think the same, they're the same entities. If you want to call it shape-shifting, or if you want to call it like wearing different suits, they can alter their physical appearance to suit their what they want to present. But then what's the underlying agenda there? What are they really trying to achieve? Are they just playing with us, or do they have some core agenda? I tend to think that there are alliances here. To me, it's almost like a Tolkien kind of panorama where you have, you know, forces that are trying to impede humanity and forces that are trying to help humanity. And I think that there are beings that can change their appearance, but they're fundamentally allied with one side or the other. That's the best I can figure out anyway. If it's something even more bizarre than that, it wouldn't surprise me. But that's the best I can figure out.
Anything else? Go ahead, Ryder.
That would be the perfect double-double, right? You know, hitting them with the double-double and making you think that they're one group of beings when they're really the other group, pretending to be the other group. You know, like, that's, I don't know, that's just where my thoughts on it go. But
well, that's a fundamental aspect of evil, is evil cannot create, it can only imitate. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have the Christ and you have the Antichrist. You have people portraying them. I think a lot of the agenda that's being portrayed right now that we're just talking about is portrayed in a very positive way. A faster internet. You have all these right. Medical interventions to help people. yeah, and there are definitely positive aspects to a lot of these technologies, but ultimately, what are we creating? We're creating a world that's increasingly poisoned, where human thought is being crowded out by automaticity. Robots are going to be replacing workers at an ever increasing pace. We have the whole idea of the Great Reset, where you have, you know, 1 or 2% of the population controlling the vast amount of wealth, and the rest
will own nothing and be happy.
Yeah, exactly. So that's, you know, some people will embrace that and be quite okay with that. But what's the ultimate agenda there? It's not for human freedom or the development of each human being to their full potential. It's nothing like that. It's a very inverted pyramid kind of thing. So,
yeah, you're right. And we are definitely witnessing a level of an evolution of our collective consciousness. There's an awakening going on for sure. I've met plenty of people. I've talked to plenty of people who have realized so many things just these past few years that are true and not true, and that they've been lied to, and becoming more spiritual and open to, metaphysical aspects of reality. There's a lot of shifts going on, but there's also kind of a de-evolution of consciousness for some people. More people are becoming kind of like brainwashed in a state. So it's kind of like we're in this incline and decline at the same time of consciousness. And I'm wondering if you think that there's a chance, any chance at all, that we could get back on track to where our collective just wants to rise, instead of having this kind of strange inclination to go backwards and de-evolve on one aspect, and then the other side of our consciousness wants to rise. Is there a way that you think we could change this and shift these timelines together?
I certainly think that it's possible, and I think that there are a lot of positive things happening in terms of an increase in awareness, an increase of consciousness, more people pursuing spiritual paths. I think one of the difficulties is we don't have the mystery schools anymore. We don't even have great teachers like Steiner anymore. So much of it is been thrust upon the individual to try to figure out, you know, without a whole lot of guidance. You know, enmeshed in this materialistic society where, you know, we're constantly being distracted. I think that there are some countervailing forces there. When I look at younger people as a whole, a lot of that depends on their cultural influences, their family and such. But as a whole, a lot of the younger people that I see work much better in groups. They have a much more tolerance for diversity. I think there's a lot of creativity that I see in terms of art, music, literature. There's a lot of unique talents out there. So I think that there are a lot of souls that are incarnating right now that are pushing us in a positive direction, that are increasingly seeing past what's going on superficially through the media, through, you know, the materialism. I think we're on our way. A lot of occult traditions, including Steiner, talk about how every major inflection point in evolution, you have some people who advance and some people who are held back. So maybe that's going to happen again. Maybe there'll be some people who will, through this crisis and through kind of trial by fire, evolve very quickly. And you may have people who are going to be trapped in, you know, if you want to call it the eighth sphere, trapped in this kind of Borg robotic mentality, and some people will willingly go there. So I guess we'll see, right?
Yeah, I guess so. Anything else, Ryder, before we get to the last section of questions that I have?
Just that I think that you're right, Robert, that the possibility is there. Now, whether we're going to jump on that opportunity and we're going to do something different and we're going to rebuild society that's going to serve everyone and everyone's highest and best good, or is it going to be the super dystopian society of the negative new world order? You know, there's only two directions that we can go with this whole thing. We got to make a choice. And we got to shift something and do something different, you know, because doing the same thing over and over again has gotten us nowhere. There's been several rises and falls of civilization, you know, through the existence of the planet. And it seems like every time we get to a certain point of consciousness on the planet, we inevitably collapse in upon ourselves. You know, everything gets, you know, destroyed, you know? So we have to find a way to get through this really rough period, and the people that survive out of that, I think that we're going to be able to build a bigger and better society of what's left over. That's just my personal thoughts.
Well, I'm hopeful that that's true. I think that may play out over hundreds or thousands of years. That's the framework I see it in. So, I don't think everyone's going to get there at the same time. Ultimately, I mean, does evil kind of gets back to the question, does evil really exist? How can you have a creator and have evil? And that's, I don't have any answer for that. I wouldn't be sitting here or talking to you guys if I knew that answer. But I'm optimistic that in the long run, you know, no soul will be left behind. And that seems to be the message of Steiner, people like Edgar Cayce, you know, other people who I think were kind of tuned into the spiritual world. But a lot of it depends upon the choices we make as individuals. I do think that we do have free will, but we seldom exercise it. And I think it's going to require more of an exercise of free will and discernment. People are going to have to become less mentally lazy and not just take what's being fed to them. And I do think that a lot of people are waking up to that.
Yeah, I think discernment is a huge part, because we're actually kind of headed into a future that I see where they are pushing things like UFOs, ghosts, the paranormal, metaphysical, psychic phenomenon into the people's consciousness, into the public's consciousness through whether it's TV shows or movies or what they're talking about in the mainstream news with UFOs. It seems like they are trying to create this this era of culture that is more open to metaphysical aspects, is more open to understanding the paranormal and looking at the possibility of life outside our planet. So I find that very interesting, and I was wondering if you think that within our lifetimes, maybe within the next 5-10 years, that we could be part of a society that just understands that, yes, the other side exists, yes, there is life outside our planet, yes, there's life beyond the super spectrum, and, you know, ghosts and the paranormal are real.
Well, again, I think there's two sides to that. I think for instance, the ancient alien folks have come up with a lot of good research indicating that there were superior intelligences involved in human evolution, but they attribute them to the physical world. Even angels were, you know, aliens with high technology, and I think that's a dangerous simplification. Spiritualism was something that Steiner and some other right-handed good occultists railed against, because they were skeptical, more than skeptical. They felt that mediums were possessed. And so spiritualism, the idea of ghosts and the hereafter can be distorted too into a materialistic kind of view. Steiner was very firm in pushing the idea of reincarnation and the idea that we have multiple lives. We don't have one life. And so you can't just contact the dead through mediums and necessarily rely upon the information that's coming through. You have the whole idea of channeling, which I think has a very dark element to it. And you have channelers, you know, with who claim to be in touch with all of these advanced beings, advanced spirits, often producing contradictory kinds of stories. So the whole landscape can be confused. On the one hand, I think we're certainly opening up to life beyond Earth. We're certainly opening up to the idea of the paranormal, the super spectrum, the metaverse, things of that nature. But if it's all reduced to a materialistic kind of explanation,
right,
you know, versus a spiritual explanation, then it really is worse than someone who believes in some outdated traditional metaphysics, because it walls us off from the spiritual realities and reduces everything to either flesh and blood aliens or just simplistic notions.
Yeah.
Does that make sense to you?
And I agree. Robert, thanks for coming on. Ryder, any other questions or comments before we close out?
Yeah, I just wanted to comment really quick that whenever Robert said, you know, about good and evil and why, you know, a God would create good, like why would God create evil? And I think that it's explained pretty well in the Bible, and it was one of my favorite verses. I don't really quote the Bible much, but it says in there, you'd have to look it up and figure out which verse it says, but it says that God created the heavens and the earth, and God created light and created darkness. God created good and created evil. I, the Lord, do all of these things. So that verse always really interested me. And I'm like, you know, because you can go so many different routes with that, you know, so many different theories and ideas of, you know, this pluralistic reality. Do we have to have good to have evil? Do we have to have dark to have light, you know, or vice versa? You know, it gets really interesting. But yeah, I just wanted to make that comment. Thank you, Chris. And thank you, Robert.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah. Any other anything to close out with, Robert, that you'd like to reply to Ryder's comment there?
Yeah, I think one way to look at all this is, again, that only sort of the forces of good can create. The forces of evil can only imitate and hinder. And perhaps they were created, and this is what Steiner believes, they were created to test human beings, in a sense, to see whether we could become spiritual beings on our own through karma, through reincarnation, which includes, you know, painful experiences, not just obviously positive experiences, but a testing of the soul. You know, God could have made us all very happy beings, kind of floating in the ether, but what would that really accomplish? So that's trying to understand the mind of God, I suppose, but that's probably as close as we're going to get to understanding what's going on at that level.
Right.
The only other thing I wanted to talk about, and we kind of, you alluded to that in the beginning.
Sure.
And I would encourage people, I'm not an anthroposophist myself, but I think there's some really good people in that field, mm-hmm. Who have done some research on, extended the findings of Steiner in terms of biodynamic gardening, in terms of his homeopathic and herbal medicines, and also in terms of what Steiner called moral technology that is directly controlled by intelligence, without any intervening electromagnetic forces or things of that nature. That's a whole very fascinating area. He distinguished that from atomic technology, which is the electromagnetic sphere. So one thing that some people in anthroposophy, some followers of Steiner, are trying to develop are what they call moral technologies. So I'd recommend, I can't get into the whole thing right now, but I recommend that people really take a look at that.
That's going to have to be a next show then. Definitely.
Yeah, sounds good. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's awesome. Something I'm still learning about myself. There is an organization called MysTech, capital MysTech. I'm actually getting an article published in their journal in November. It's an expanded version of the UFO paper. But that's an organization that's working on developing moral technologies and the whole idea of that. It comes back to the Keeley machine, which probably you guys have heard of.
Yes. Yeah.
John Keeley expanding on that technology. So there is, in a sense, good technology that's being developed. It's not all anti-technology. So I'll just leave it at that for now.
Yeah. Well, I'd love to discuss that more in the future. Robert, thank you so much for coming on. That was fantastic. Ryder, thank you for co-hosting. And until next time, everyone, have an excellent evening. We will talk again this Sunday.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you.